and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the ISO Board of Governors General Session Teleconference and Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instruction will be given at that time. Should you require assistance during the call, press star, then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I'd like to now turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Roger Collington, for roll call. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, sir. We'll start out with roll call. Governor Bhagwat?
Present.
Governor Ferrin?
Present.
Governor Golitova?
Present.
Chair Mullen?
Present.
And Governor Olson?
Present.
Excellent. Thank you. In the... turn it over to you now, Richard. The next item up is whether we have public comment on a general item or general issues, not the specific.
Do we have public comment on any issue other than the subject matter of the call? Hearing none, I guess we have none. So
we need to queue it up. But... okay, it looks like there was none.
So... according to my sheet, we're now ready to hear from Keith Casey.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Mullen. On this item, we're seeking your approval of certain operational and market measures to address the ongoing reliability concerns with the Aliso Canyon gas-electric coordination issue. As you may recall, in earlier this year in May, you approved a number of temporary operational market measures to help mitigate the summer reliability issues created by the loss of the Aliso Canyon natural gas storage facility in Southern California. These measures were approved by FERC to be effective through November 30th of this year. And on this item, we're seeking your approval to extend the majority of the operational and market measures you approved in May through November of next year. So Greg Cook, our Director of Market and Infrastructure Policy, will present this to you. But before he begins, I did want to recognize Kathleen Colbert for her great work in leading this initiative, as well as Didi Sabaki, Anna McKenna, Sydney Manhine, and Sean Grant. So I want to thank them for their efforts as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to Greg.
Thanks, Keith. Good afternoon, everyone. So going to present to you for a decision our proposal on going forward another set of temporary measures for the Aliso Canyon proposal. We're going to be proposing this set of measures to be in effect for a year. As Keith mentioned, the current provisions will expire at the end of November, so we would be asking FERC again to temporarily approve these measures till the end of November of 2017. If you recall, we filed with FERC to have these set as temporary measures, so for a couple of reasons. One, we asked FERC to have an expedited treatment on determining whether or not we could have these provisions put in place, and it also allowed us to look at how they might have performed over the summer and to look at the winter assessment to see what types of reliability risks we may be facing this winter with the limited ability of the Aliso Canyon storage facility to see if these are still appropriate going forward. And as Keith mentioned, we're going to propose that most of these provisions do be kept in place over the winter and through next summer as well. Turning to slide two, we are looking at the key findings of the winter reliability assessment that was conducted by an interagency task force. This included the CPUC, the CEC, the ISO, LADWP, Southern California Gas, and SDG&E. And the key findings of that reliability assessment for the winter are, first, that the risk of gas imbalances, which was the primary concern in the summer, from non-core electric generators is not the primary driver of the winter risk. The winter risk is when we're looking at peak gas demand, it's more of an overall capacity need, and with the limited ability of Aliso Canyon, what risk that might present. Another finding is that the demand really flips again from non-core generators due to lower electric loads in the winter to the core customers, which have higher gas loads during the winter time, and in fact, we see that the core customers use approximately 60% of the gas supply in the winter. And building on that, also it's good to note that the non-core generators are the first to be curtailed in the event that we do not have sufficient on-system gas to meet the core and non-core demand. And finally, due to the electric demand being lower in the winter, it also gives us some additional flexibility to shift generation from outside of Southern California into Southern California to help address potential gas limitations in the area. So with that, I'll go over each of the provisions that were approved in May, and our recommendation as to which ones to retire and which ones to extend for another year. The first one that we put in place was the ability to reserve internal transfer capability into Southern California. The idea here was that if we had unexpected needs in real time for additional electric demand, that we could release some additional transfer capability in Southern California to help relieve that. However, we're proposing to retire this provision. The reason being is that we find that this is no longer needed now due to a change in the way that the reliability coordinator, PEAC, has changed the way that they establish system operating limits. And with these new provisions, the ISO can now adjust the system operating limits, are allowed to exceed the path limits in during emergency conditions. So with this, we can achieve the same thing that we were trying to achieve by reserving internal transfer capability into Southern California. So we no longer need this provision. And along this, we're also do not need the related measure where we would need to potentially look at reducing CRR amounts in the monthly auction in the event that we were having to reduce this internal transfer capability fairly often. So that those two were proposing to retire. Next is the gas burn constraint that we had implemented, and this essentially would allow us to have a max burn constraint or a minimum burn constraint in the market. For Southern California, this could be applied either in the day-ahead market, the real-time market, or both. It also could be applied either for a specific gas zone or a group of gas zones. And for this one, we're proposing to extend it but refine it. We believe that this will still be an effective measure in the event that we get into tight gas supply situations going forward in the winter as well as in the summer. But we're refining it in that we found that we no longer need the minimum gas burn constraint, because as we've looked at it and heard from stakeholders, we believe that generators have quite a bit of control over ensuring their minimum gas burns, either by lowering their economic bids or by self-scheduling the generation. So we're proposing to extend this one, but again, refine it by eliminating the minimum gas burn constraint feature of this one. Next, we're also proposing to extend many of the market changes that we put in place in May. The first one was to publish the two-day-ahead schedules to scheduling coordinators. Again, this provides scheduling coordinators with some advance notification of what their expected gas burn might be to help them procure gas in the day-ahead time frame. So we're going to extend that one to continue to provide that information. The next one was improving the day-ahead market gas price index. And for this one, the current gas price index that we use essentially is as a one-day lag, so it's using day-old gas prices for gas schedules that are used in our day-ahead market. So to try and mitigate that lag, we've proposed a new gas price index that the ISO would calculate based on gas trades that are occurring in the morning of prior to the day-ahead market run, so that we'll have gas prices more aligned with day-ahead market schedules. So we're going to propose to extend that one as well. Next is to adjust the real-time market gas price index to include a scaler on the next day gas price index. So here, this would allow resources to have more flexibility to adjust their gas prices between day ahead and real time to ensure that they're able to effectively do that, as well as try and make sure that we have gas generators in local areas that are only used to meet local gas needs, local reliability needs, and not system needs. So we're proposing to extend that one as well. And the final one here is to include an after-the-fact cost recovery filing to include the opportunity to seek energy costs incurred above the mitigated prices. Again, this is one that, in the event that we're seeing a fair amount of gas price volatility and units are mitigated, that they're able to seek recovery at FERC in the event that they were unable to recur their actual gas costs incurred because of the fact that they were mitigated down to a default energy bid price. So we're proposing to extend that one as well. And then finally, we have a group of provisions that we had included in our commitment cost enhancements and bidding rules enhancements initiative that we had proposed to be permanent provisions. We filed these as part of the temporary ALISO provisions as well, so that they could be implemented in an expedited fashion. Again, we're proposing to file with FERC to have these extended in the event that we do not receive a FERC ruling on these provisions that were filed on August 19th to be permanent. And these include three different provisions. One is to increase commitment cost real-time bidding flexibility. This would allow resources to provide new commitment cost bids in real time, what they provided in the day-ahead market. This is subject to limitations. It would be limited to hours in which they did not have a day-ahead market schedule or in which they were not constrained due to commitment decisions in real time. So this one's filed. Again, we're pending approval on this. In the event that we do not get FERC approval, we would ask for FERC to extend this one as well. Next is not inserting real-time bids for units that are not required to participate or scheduled in the day-ahead market. So these are for non-resource adequacy resources. In the event that they do not submit bids, we will not automatically provide bids for them into the real-time market. This will ensure that those resources are not obligated to go and try and procure gas for a potential commitment in the day-ahead market in the event that they were not scheduled in day-ahead. So again, that has been filed, and we'll be filing to have that extended in the event we don't get a FERC order. And then finally, the after-the-fact cost recovery filing for commitment costs, this one as well, we would have extended in the event that we do not get a FERC order on this. So we are asking for board approval to make a filing to extend these provisions for another year in the event that we do not receive a FERC order prior to the when they would expire on November 30th of this year. So finally, stakeholders do support our proposal to extend the operational and market measures to address the ALISO Canyon reliability risks. We did have some comments that stakeholders would like to see additional information released to the market related to the measures that we're proposing here, and as well as the ISO's gas and electric coordination. We are reviewing that. We are in the process of providing this information where it is appropriate. Some stakeholders, including the Department of Market Monitoring, want management to pursue new provisions to mitigate exceptional dispatches due to natural gas limitations. We've agreed that we would examine this, whether these new measures are needed and what the appropriate measures would be as part of our upcoming stakeholder process that we're on commitment costs and default energy bid enhancements. And again, we would continue to develop those through that stakeholder process, but in the event that it found that exceptional dispatches were becoming more prevalent and the market power issues were becoming problematic, that we could accelerate the implementation of those provisions if so needed. And finally, there's a fair amount of stakeholder support for pursuing more longer-term enhancements to the commitment cost and default energy bid market designs so that they are better able to accommodate natural gas price volatility going forward. So with that, management's recommending that the board approve the Aliso Canyon Phase 2 proposal. We believe it continues to provide the important functionality to mitigate the reliability concerns due to the limited operability of the Aliso Canyon storage facility. Proposal also is designed to include flexibility to allow the ISO to adjust the use of these tools to align it with the market and reliability needs. And again, well, we'll have this set of provisions will be set to expire on November 30th to enable us to once again ask FERC for expedited treatment on this proposal, as well as give us some time to start looking at the development of more longer-term comprehensive solutions. So that is the end of my proposal and end of my presentation. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions directly for Greg?
Greg?
So this is...
Go ahead, Ash.
This is Ash. The question I had was I saw in the DMM report that they were recommending making the use of the same-day gas prices permanent, and I'm wondering why you decided not to do that.
We decided not to do that as a temporary measure because, again, we're asking FERC for expedited treatment. I mean, that is one of the provisions that we've included in the new stakeholder process that will be starting this month. We're looking at a whole host of potential enhancements to our commitment cost rules in that stakeholder process. So, you know, our view is that that will allow additional time for us to stakeholder that issue as well as other issues to come up with the best solution for a longer term solution as we move forward. So, you know, again, I think we're somewhat limited in the fact that we've had a very expedited stakeholder process as well as, you know, putting FERC under the gun a little bit by asking for expedited treatment on this filing. So with that, you know, we think it's more appropriate to do it at temporary at this time and consider it as permanent later.
Okay.
So, if you have something?
Greg, this is Dave Olson. On the issue of reserving internal transfer capability into Southern California, on your slide 3?
Yes.
A couple of questions about that. So Peak RC changed its system operating limit methodology.
Right.
So now the rating can be exceeded, the line rating can be exceeded under emergency conditions.
Yes.
For how long? How long can the line operate above its rated capacity?
That's a good question, Dave. I believe they have to get it back down to the rated capacity within 30 minutes, but I'll have to double check on that. I think our operators were fairly confident that we would be able to release some of that capacity to address any operational needs due to gas limitations due to that increased flexibility that Peak RC is now providing us.
But that's really short term. I mean, getting back to your system operating limits within 30 minutes is pretty standard, but that would be a very short term fix. And my question really is, why wouldn't it be prudent to retain the flexibility to reserve internal transfer capability both for LSO-related events, but maybe for other system emergencies as well into Southern California, like something like San Onofre retirement, unexpected failures of things? Are we giving up flexibility that would be prudent to retain?
Governor Olson, this is Mark Rothiter. This higher than limit is a provision that would allow us to go above the pre-contingency limit in preparation for a contingency happening. And so this would allow us to do that because we have it would rely on the fact that we've got some remedial action schemes that would actually reduce load at a sufficient quantity to go to the higher limit. So it's if we had to go there in an emergency condition, it's a condition that we could go there as long as we need be, But if the contingency happens, we're still prepared for that contingency. So the emergency is not the outage of the line or the rating line. The emergency is that we had a gas condition or something that required us to have go to the higher limits temporarily.
No, I understand that.
I guess maybe I'm having a similar confusion, which is that, I mean, if there's a gas shortage, isn't that likely to last for more than 30 minutes?
That's what I'm saying is if we needed to go to this higher limit, I think we can go there for longer than 30 minutes because it's a protection against a before the contingency on the line actually occurs. And so we are secure in case the contingency occurs at any time. It's just that going above the rated amount is only a temporary provision in case the system is in some kind of emergency need to do so. And it would also look at the underlying amount of load that could be dropped in case of the contingency actually happening.
And Mark, just as this is Steve, as a case in point, you would be really running at a higher risk profile at the emergency rating because you'd be relying on the RAS scheme, which is likely to drop load. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
So there's not, in my understanding, there's not a limitation of you can only be at that higher rating during emergency conditions for 30 minutes. It's why you're in emergency condition and while the amount of load drop is sufficient to still be secure in case of the contingency happening.
You don't want to trigger the RAS if
no.
We can avoid that doing that.
That's right. Correct.
So wouldn't reserving more internal transfer capability help avoid having to trigger the RAS?
Yes.
So why do we want to give up that flexibility? I think maybe this...
Dave, this is Greg. You know, I think one of the reasons we're proposing to retire it is that we believe that this, you know, the increased flexibility provided by the new system operating limit methodology does give us the reliability protections we were looking for. And at the same time, the original provision, there were a lot of concerns raised with that, in that it wasn't clear how often ISO operators might be invoking it. Given that, there could be potential issues with valuation of CRRs and, you know, whether or not we needed to make adjustments to how many CRRs we were releasing into the market, and that by reducing the transfer capability into Southern California, that could have fairly significant market impacts as well. So, you know, all of those types of concerns combined had stakeholders, you know, fairly nervous about that type of provision in the original circumstance. And now that we have this increased flexibility provided by PEEQ that helps deal with the reliability concern, we thought that, you know, this is really, it's probably best to retire that provision so that those, you know, market concerns could go away and we could still be able to address the reliability needs of the system.
Okay, that's helpful, Greg. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That makes sense now.
Do we have any other questions for staff?
This is Dave again. I have one more question about in Keith's memo, page 5, talking about making advisory information about estimates of resources day-ahead market schedules available to market participants. And my question is, does releasing that information provide any opportunities for gaming, so on the part of other market participants? or is this in your presentation, Greg? It looked like this was this information related only to residual unit commitment, or is this additional information?
No, this is information. We run a D+2 day ahead market run, and so this is information related to that. But we're only providing scheduling coordinators with their own potential day ahead market schedule at that time. So they don't get to see everybody's schedule. They only get to see their own, which would help them in their, you know, helping them to assess what how much gas they need to procure for their potential generation schedules.
Yeah, that's not what the memo says. So if this information is being released only to scheduling coordinators about their own behavior, that's fine. But if it's being released to all market participants, which is what I the way that I read the memo, then that raises questions.
Okay, yeah, no, it is the former.
Okay. Okay. I don't have any other questions, Richard.
Okay. Anybody else? Can we move on?
I do think, Stacy, just as a matter of corporate record, I do want to make sure we capture that in minutes, the point that Dave just raised about the it being unclear in the memo. Sorry, Richard, go ahead.
Okay, well, I was just, it seems we have no other questions from the board, so now we're ready for public comment on this issue. And I guess there's a queue that's already been organized. And the first one that I have is Christine Schmidt, our chair of the EIM governing.
Okay. Christine, your line should be open.
Great, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Yep.
Great, thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. I wanted to take an opportunity to address this initiative that's before you today from the EIM governing body's perspective. As you're aware, this initiative falls into the advisory category of responsibilities that is in place for the EIM governing body. Per the charter approved last December, which really outlines our advisory role for those rules like this that govern the real-time market, or rules that generally apply to any participation in the ISO wholesale markets. And since the governing body was seated earlier this summer, this is the first advisory matter to be evaluated and put through the ISO's decisional process. And as such, earlier this month, the ISO staff apprised me of the then pending FERC technical conference, the urgent timeframe to expedite this through the stakeholder process, and the timeline to submit tariff language for FERC acceptance to mitigate the ongoing reliability risk associated with Aliso Canyon, and the schedule needed for the various reviews and to secure those approvals to make the FERC filing was markedly condensed. And staff brought this to my attention to determine if the EIM governing body would insert itself into the schedule as our charter allows, and essentially to take a formal position and offer an advisory opinion to the Board of Governors. And under these particular circumstances, as chair, I made the decision that the EIM governing body would not take a formal position and would not hold a special meeting to review the proposal as an advisory issue, because doing so in all likelihood would disrupt the schedule and delay securing these very necessary approvals to get the important tariff language in place by November 30th. And because the staff recommendations for the Aliso Canyon Phase 2 are largely extensions of current tariff language previously approved by FERC with some refinements, and because of the exigent circumstances surrounding the Aliso Canyon initiative, I believed it more important that the EIM governing body's role on this particular advisory initiative was to stay informed through staff briefings, to keep apprised of the developments in the FERC regulatory proceedings, and to prepare for the long-term solutions and recommendations that staff will eventually work through the stakeholder process. As such, over the last month, and with that in mind, the ISO staff has briefed all the EIM governing body members and has committed to provide regular updates and briefings going forward. One final point I'd like to make is that the governing body has not met to discuss the Aliso Canyon Phase 2 initiative as a body. However, going forward, we will be very active and engaged and will develop advisory and decisional positions as appropriate on matters under our delegated authority, including the longer-term permanent policies decisions associated with the Aliso Canyon initiative. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to explain my decision and concerning the EIM governing body's participation in this particular matter.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have any questions for Christine from the board staff, board and staff?
No, but Christine, we very much appreciate you're really paying attention to these issues, and we'll look forward to the EIM governing body's advice on these matters going forward.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anybody else on the line who would have a question for the ISO?
Okay. If you do have a question from the phone line, please press star then one. Any question or comment would be star and one.
Looks like we have no other comment other than Christine. So.
That is correct right now, yeah.
All right, then we want to play some music. Hildebrand.
Yes, next up we have Eric Hildebrand on behalf of DMM.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Yeah, this is Eric. We submitted a memo to you and really just highlighting some key points. The first and probably most important of which is, you know, we do support extending the gas scalers that allow participants to bid higher in the real-time market. You know, we wanted to point out we have done and will continue to do a lot of analysis of those. You know, in retrospect, it turns out, you know, only a few participants have utilized those extensively. And, you know, given the way things went, fortunately, they did not have a large impact this summer, but we agree it's prudent to keep them in place for the winter and keep them in place and leave the current levels in place as well. And we'll continue to monitor that. And, you know, again, those are things that scalers that can be raised or lowered if needed throughout the winter. So we wanted to point to that analysis that we had performed. Of that, you know, the issue of the day ahead price index came up. We do think this is a kind of a common sense improvement to the day ahead market. That our understanding that what was preventing it before it wasn't feasible. To our knowledge, it's universally supported and now feasible. So you know, we do think that's something. It should be implemented as a permanent measure. You know, I guess while this had expedited, considered the stakeholder process was quite expedited, and we wouldn't want to hold up the FERC approval of this. We are noting that that has no opposition to our knowledge. Another point on cost recovery for energy bids was, I think, as Greg mentioned. That cost recovery is being extended to include energy bids, which are lowered to the default energy bid. And we're asking NYISO to clarify, does this include EIN entities out, which are not mitigated through our automated mitigation? They're not mitigated by the ISO, but are required to bid at or below their default energy bid pursuant to a FERC order. And to our knowledge, this hadn't been discussed publicly, and the intent may be to include them. So that's something we're asking the ISO to clarify in its filing and in the tariff language. Finally, as Greg noted, we had made a recommendation about exceptional dispatches. And this is basically if the ISO does need to manually basically issue a dispatch up or down for a unit because of gas constraints. We do think this should probably be subject to mitigation In a case like that, you know, there we don't expect the condition to be very competitive in terms of which units are managed. So, you know, as far as addressing this, we agree that it can be addressed in a future process. You know, we'll make point. We don't think it should be a major issue. And I think one point we make there is, you know, should it turn out to be a major issue, there's certainly other priorities that DMM would place higher in the stakeholder process than this one. So we wanted to put that recommendation in perspective. And with that, those are the items. If you have any questions for me, I can take those.
Any questions for Eric?
Okay. Once again, if you do have a question, it'd be star then one from the phone. All right. We have Sammy George. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I just want to check if there's an opportunity for public comment at this time. I don't actually have a question. They're more in the nature of remarks.
Before we get to public comment, I can respond to Eric's request for the policy clarification on the default energy bids. You know, our policy view on that is that anytime a gas generator was settled based on their default energy bids, and that as a result of that caused them to be unable to recover their actual incurred costs, then we believe they should have the opportunity to file for that cost recovery at FERC and make their case to FERC as to what their actual costs were. Again, it would be up to FERC as to whether or not they would allow them to recover those costs. So, you know, simply stated, yes, we in our proposal it would apply to both generators that were subject to the LMPM and paid based on a default energy bid, as well as EIM resources that are required to bid at their default energy bid.
Any further comment? Not. Is there anybody else in the speaking queue?
Let's go ahead and give Sammy an opportunity for her comment now.
Thank you. This is Simi George. I am representing Environmental Defense Fund, and I want to start, first of all, by thanking CAISO for all its efforts to address short-term reliability risks. I have two substantive points to make. One is on the need for CAISO to promptly consider longer-term measures to address the market design issues that are underlying the reliability risks we are facing. And the second is for CAISO to explore how best to deploy demand-side alternatives consistent with FERC's June 1st order. So on the first point, while we appreciate the need to prioritize the consideration of short-term reliability risks, we do want to highlight that it's been a year since the Aliso Canyon incident. And with CAISO now seeking to extend most of the measures approved as part of the Phase 1 process through November 30th next year, we find that the short-term responses, which were intended to be temporary, are now taking on the character of longer-term measures. And so given that Aliso Canyon is unlikely to be restored to full functionality in the near future, and knowing that there are recent changes in gas storage regulations that will need to be addressed on the electric side, we wanted to highlight the need for prompt consideration of longer-term market refinements. We appreciate the fact that CAISO has expressed an intention to evaluate market design features relating to commitment costs and default energy bids through a new stakeholder process. But there are other fundamental market design issues that EDF and other stakeholders have highlighted, including the need for improved gas-electric coordination, which includes better alignment between the gas and electric markets, and enhancements allowing generators to better reflect sub-day marginal gas price supply costs into energy market bids. So that brings me to my second point, which is on the need to more closely examine demand-side alternatives. As I mentioned before, with FERC's June 1st order encouraging, and I'm quoting here, all involved to deploy demand-side alternatives to the fullest extent possible, we've noted that agencies such as the CPUC have already started making efforts to more fully explore demand-side alternatives like demand response. But both the Phase 2 draft final proposal that's before the board today, as well as the Phase 1 proposal that was eventually adopted by FERC, are silent on demand response. And so we wanted to highlight one point, which is the need to prioritize consideration of how best to give effect to FERC's directive to deploy demand-side alternatives more fully. Demand response is a capable flexibility resource and should be valued and called forth by the wholesale market design. So that brings me to the close of my comments. Thanks for your attention, and thanks again for the opportunity to present comments today.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Okay, I'm calling for any further comments on the issue that's before us. I guess with that, the comments are concluded. Rogers, it will be time for you to read the motion.
Thank you, Chair Mullen. Move that the ISO Board of Governors approves the Aliso Canyon Gas Electric Coordination Phase 2 proposal as described in the memorandum dated September 29, 2016, and move that the ISO Board of Governors authorizes management to make all necessary and appropriate filings with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to implement the proposed tariff change. Do you have a moving party?
I'll move. It's Mark.
Mark. And second?
Angelina. I'll second.
Thank you, Angelina. I will go ahead and take the vote now by roll. Governor Bhagwat?
Aye.
Governor Farron?
Aye.
Governor Golitova?
Aye.
Chair Mullen?
Yes.
Governor Olson?
Aye.
Thank you, Governors. The motion passes.
We don't have any other business under the schedule for this call, so I guess we're done.
I think we can adjourn.
All right.
Thank you, Governors. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation in using AT&T Executive Teleconferencing. You may now disconnect.